yenleyen Indian trails winding from tribe to tribe over 100 years ago. Another Robert E. Callahan story of wigwam fires, council teepee, trapping, trading, nomadic travel, and exciting adventure featuring the lone Indian in his daring search for the magic arrow of the Omahas. Real Indians appear on every broadcast.
Well, who do you suppose killed Luke Berry? Who got the money? Look out, Indians are ahead. You know, folks, this apparent warning confronted Colonel Henry Lee in Pueblo Canyon a long time ago. You see, his westbound caravan had hardly gotten underway one beautiful Sunday morning in the mountains of Colorado when Lee saw a board sign tacked to a tree near the roadside. On that sign, crudely printed in black, "Who killed Luke Berry? Who got the money? Look out. Indians ahead." Well, of course, every member of the caravan thought of trouble. But the caravan moved on. In fact, about 200 yards further on, and just as the caravan moved around a bend in the road, Colonel Lee saw a large white buffalo skull hung to a tree spreading over the roadway. On this white buffalo skull in black was printed, "Dead men don't tell tales, but don't turn back." Kind of confusing, he said to himself. A warning, perhaps. But what could Colonel Lee do 800 miles from home? The road was an Indian trail, the same country in which the Comanches and the Utes had been battling over the right to hunting grounds. As a matter of fact, a half-breed trapper had told Lee a thrilling story one day of that country. He had told him of trouble along the trail. He had warned him of attack, murder, and told a terrible tale of what might happen to Lee. The crude signs would indicate that the half-breed story of impending trouble would come true. Now, who was Luke Berry, anyway? Why had he been robbed, and who committed the crime? Yes, and who wrote the signs, when and why? In spite of these agitating, conflicting moments, Colonel Lee would not turn back. No, sir, there was nothing to do but continue on. Well, sir, folks, about 1 hour later, the caravan of 8 wagons was crossing a shallow creek, splashing sand and water, and Colonel Lee had a premonition, a sort of a hunch, you know, a hunch that he was being followed, a premonition that made him turn in the wagon seat. For a moment, his body went rigid. 2 wild-looking Indians were emerging from the forest on hand and knee, creeping, half-crawling. One was tall, the other short, and both the men were nude above the waist. Each man had 2 white, 2 wet, and 2 black lines across the face. Yes, sir, and each man had a dangerous-looking bow and arrow. Of course, you know, any sign of fear when meeting an Indian is an indication of cowardice to the red man. Colonel Lee knew this, and he also knew it was no time to show fear. So he drove his team across the creek, pulled up to the right of the roadway, and as the other wagons got across, Colonel Lee crawled down from his wagon, turned to see the two Indians stiff and staring at him. And, of course, his first thought was an Indian sign. Yes, sir, an Indian sign. So he stood erect. His right palm went out, folded back, leaving two forefingers up. This meant friendly. Then, of course, he went about making his campfire just as though he had given no thought to the Indian. And the two native red men started toward camp. Colonel Lee, you see, had lived among the Indians for about 2 years before his marriage. And when departing from the Kentucky Hills on the westbound California trip, Lee remembered the Indian was a great lover of music. He brought the village troopers along just for this reason. So now he turned to Banjo Harry. Say, what do you say, boys? Let's have a campfire breakdown. You see, music was not the inner thought of Colonel Lee, folks. Oh, no. But the Colonel's knowledge of Indian life made music the spirit of that hour. Colonel Lee knew, as in every walk of life, people can do more with kindness and music than anger and guns. Meanwhile, the Indians stood like statues, wondering how the white man could make such music. The two Indians had started out intent upon taking human life. But you see, the village music and Colonel Lee's friendly invitation to have a friendly supper for them gave the red men a new thought. So they took hold of the fiddle, and then they expected the accordion and the banjo. And again, the village troopers soon had the Indians in a puzzling but, oh, very joyous mood. Well, so folks, you know, 1 week later on that same canyon trail, well, it was a very unusual thing. You see, for 2 hours, the village troopers entertained the two warlike Indians. And now they departed from camp, returning to the Camarachi village in peace. And Colonel Lee, of course, had not only saved the lives of his people through a kindly musical act, but he had made a lifelong friend out of an Indian who was the leader of two people who had planned to murder. And you see, the caravan once more moved on in peace. Well, sir, it was just about 1 week later, as I said a little while ago, that an army lieutenant by the name of Ball shot an Indian pony because the pony was too wiry for the lieutenant to ride. And, sir, that same night an Indian rode an army horse away. 1 week later, Chivington, the man who had been a church worker in Denver for 2 years, had himself appointed major. And at the head of 200 arrogant Indian haters, he rode down one night upon the Black Kettle camp on Cherry Creek. Black Kettle, you see, was chief of the Cheyenne Indians, a sturdy man who had, under promise of friendship and protection, moved his Cheyenne tribe from a field of war down into Cherry Creek country where Denver, Colorado now stands. Black Kettle had kept his word, and not a single gun or war club was out in his village. But this condition made no difference to the man who had left his Denver church for the trail of murder. Major Chivington ordered the Indian men, the women, and the children shot down wherever he found them. And do you know, folks, in a wild frenzy to escape, the white man, and while women and children were running for dear life, the half-drunken white mob found sport, shooting, laughing, and imitating the Indian with war whoop. And do you know, many little children fell with a bullet in the back. Over 500 Indians were killed, and Black Kettle's peaceful village was ignited and in 10 minutes became a smoldering bed of ashes. You know, friends, the Chivington Massacre is a black spot on the American map of honor. Major Chivington was court-martialed, of course, but the work of his murdering mob did not bring life back, and it did not bring the music and the kindness and the friendship as shown by the work of Colonel Henry Lee. The Chivington Massacre was a direct cause of many Indian wars upon the white man, and yet many people of today wonder why the Indian did his wigwam dance. Although he hooped and yelled and he became the terror of the Old West, we who want health and peace of mind, we who want happiness, yes, sir, we are going back to live as the Indian did long ago. We seek pure air, sunshine. We picnic on the mountainside and hike over the old Indian trail just as the Indian did. And that is why the child of tomorrow should be told of the Indian's great love for nature and his great love for the beauty of outdoor life. For after all, there is more health and more peace and more happiness to be found in learning the value of nature than living in any city home of wealth and power. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed the story. We try to give you real stories of the Old West. And as our campfire is growing dim, we offer you the pipe of peace until we meet again in the campfire circle. This is the old trapper speaking. Yo-ho. Yo-ho.